full of crap. So now the countdown starts, yet it says we're live. So the countdown starts, right? Peter Schilling, Major Tom is coming home. So what's up, everyone? Hey, it's Phil Gerbyshack again. Today, we are in for a special treat. Today, we're in for the founder and chief catalyst of Day One Leadership, Drew Dudley. Now, Drew is from Canada, which is way north of the Wisconsin border by likely less miles than most of you realize, because, you know, Toronto and the other provinces are actually south of where I'm from. But anyway, so Drew is the founder and chief catalyst of Day One Leadership, which helps organizations around the world increase their leadership capacity. He's worked with some amazing companies like McDonald's, DreamWorks Animation, JP Morgan Chase, and over 75 colleges and universities. And the crazy thing about Drew is his TED Talk, for those of you not familiar with TED, so the seven of you who've never heard of TED.com, TED is remarkable. And get this, Drew was one of the most 15 most inspirational TED Talks of all time, which I would say that makes him freaking awesome. And I beat his butt last year in fantasy football. So what's up, Drew?
I am good, my friend. I will say, before we get too excited about popular TED Talks, there was a video of a lemon rolling down a hill 2 weeks ago that got five times the number of views any of my TED Talks have ever gotten in about a day and a half. So anytime I start feeling like I'm a special guy for that TED Talk, I just go back and watch the lemon rolling down the hill, and I am reminded, yeah, simmer it down on how cool you are, big guy.
So Drew's book is all about how to roll a lemon down the hill and go viral. For those of you who haven't, no, it's not. It's called This Is Day One. It actually is really an awesome book. Drew, you sent me a PDF of it, which I'm delighted by. It's one of those books that looks like it's going to be a fast read, I got to tell you, because there's not like a – it's not like really dense with words on each page. And then I look at it, I'm like, dude, this is like a lot of work. So what the heck is Day One Leadership, man? What is this thing? I mean, this is your life, brother. Tell us, what is this?
Day One Leadership tries to solve a problem. And the problem is that the vast majority of people on the planet don't see themselves as leaders. And most of the leadership that does occur on the planet comes from people who don't see themselves as leaders. And that, I think, is a problem, because it means that most of the biggest impact that we're having is by accident. We are not seeing ourselves as leaders, and that means we're not engaging in leadership behaviors because we defined it way too narrowly. And then we let all of these moments of leadership pass us by and pass by the people we love. We don't take credit for it. Don't let ourselves feel good about it. And for better or for worse, the stuff that makes us feel good, that's the stuff we're going to do every day over and over again. So the idea is that if we can become more conscious of the fact that we're leaders, we're far more likely to consciously keep doing those things that impact other people positively. The thing about leadership is, because we've been educated and socialized as we grew up out of seeing ourselves as leaders, is that ultimately we don't know where to start. Like, we just don't think it's part of us, so we don't know where to start. And Day One, basically, that's the whole idea, is we're going to give you a place to start recognizing your leadership. So forget all the big theories, forget what you've got to accomplish over a year or 2 years, or what your titles are, how much money you make. This is about, if this was your first day, if you could go back to Day One and build yourself into the leader that you want to be, here's how to do it. So that's what the book highlights. It wants to take a look at all of you out there. Like, everyone watching, just think for a second about that person in your life that as soon as they walk into a room, everybody feels better. Like, it's just this upbeat thing, and that person doesn't see themselves as a leader. That's ultimately what I want to address with the book, is let's reframe how we think about it. Let's unlearn all these lessons that taught us that leadership is this big thing. It's in all of us, but not just automatically. Like, everyone is a leader. Well, you're a leader if you choose to be. You're a leader if you consciously make a plan to. So the book was about how to do it.
Wow. So, okay. So let's be clear here. Let's debunk a couple mix. And let's say hi to Michael Cameron, who says, hi, Drew. Miss you, bud. So that's cool. So we've got one fan here. That's good.
Dude, Michael Cameron, just so you know, it's michaelcameron.ca, and he can comment in and correct it. Michael Cameron is a perfect example of the type of leadership or the type of leader that this book aims to celebrate. And, you know, if you talk about a guy like Mike, who is a CEO, and you think, oh, that's what makes him a leader. But what makes Mike a leader is how he behaves on a daily basis. I have not gone to dinner with Mike Cameron once in my life where he did not stealthily pay for somebody else's meal in the restaurant. And, you know, the guy has coffee with strangers on Facebook randomly once a week just so that he can offer support and insight and learn about other people. So that it's not the CEO part of Mike that is leadership. It is how he chooses to behave on a daily basis. And so thank you, my friend. But and that's really one of the premises of the book, too, is that leadership recognized is leadership created. And that, I think, is really important, is that when we recognize the leadership around us, we make people aware that that's how it's seen by others. Holy cow, I had no idea that person saw me as a leader, and they're more likely to do it again, right? So that to me, like Mike, I'm glad he popped in right there, because that's a perfect example. Like most of the leaders that are your heroes should be people that you know, because you actually get to see how they make their decisions every day. And the famous people that we often put on a pedestal as leaders, all we saw was the outcome of their decisions. We don't know what criteria they used to make them. We don't know who they hurt along the way. But the people that you get to see making decisions every day, those should be your leadership heroes. And that's a really big tenet from what I talk about as well, is let's stop looking up on pedestals for leaders and let's start looking around at our lives and tell those people, because then they'll do more of the things that impress us.
Wow. Yeah. Well, what gets recognized gets repeated.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Right. I mean, the more that we recognize someone, the more good they're going to do, the better, you know, we recognize behaviors, not just outcomes, because otherwise we get in trouble here. So while that's, you know, I get that and you get that because obviously it's your book and you get that better than I do. How the heck did you come up with this, man? Like, where did this come from? What's the, you know, what's the little mustard seed that sparked inside Drew that says, dude, day one leadership is where it's at? Because I got to tell you, man, it is revolutionary when you really think about every day is day one. So where did that start?
You know, what's interesting is that while the whole concept of the book is to start on day one, like a very specific place, where the idea came from, it is kind of, I think, like a microcosm for how all our lives work. There is no one seed, but there were a whole bunch of seeds planted along the way. And then you had people who came around and created an environment where new ideas and I was able to create new perspectives, and that was the soil. And then you have these mentors, older and younger, who come into your life and they water it up a little bit. So there's no there's no one place you can turn back to. But for me, you know, I lived most of my youth for people I hadn't met yet. And I didn't realize that till later, but when you're in high school and you're told again and again, oh, you have to go to university, you have to go to college, or your life won't be a success, you end up living your entire life in high school for university and college admissions counselors who you've never met before. And then you get to college, university, and you're living your life for interviewers and recruiters who you've never met before. Then you get your first job or your second job, and it's always about what can I get on my resume and how can I get promoted so that some other recruiter or some other HR person at some other company will hire you and give you more money. Haven't met any of them yet. And a lot of what we do here in terms of our education and our careers and what we acquire and accomplish is to impress some person out there that we haven't met yet who's going to say, I want to spend the rest of my life with this person so we can find our romantic partner. So much of what we do when we're young, and in many cases still today, are for people we have not met yet. And that was my life. And then a young guy passed away when I was at university, and 1,000 people showed up at his funeral, and he was 24 years old. And it was because I realized that he lived his life every day to have a positive impact on the people that surrounded him at that moment. He was not living his life looking off to the future. And that, to me, I realized, you know, man, like I'd had all these awards and all these accolades and have been told from a very young age that you were exactly what a student is supposed to be and what a leader is supposed to be. And yet, you know, you're sitting there at this guy's funeral, and I kept thinking, what if this was me? You know, like, would this many people care? And I realized it's hard. You know, it was a dark thing to think. I'm like, no, not as many people would care, because my whole life had not been about the people around me. It had been about how good I looked on paper. That, you know, is where it started to shift. The lollipop moment, you know, which is the TED Talk, the idea that when I discovered that the biggest impact I'd had on another human being was in this moment I didn't remember, some girl and a guy that I connected in line on their first day of university. I don't remember that. And then to realize that after all this stuff I was working for, my biggest moment of leadership was an accident, right? And, you know, then your life starts to become part of it. And a big part of the name Day One, you know, the approach and kind of evolved over time. But there was a day in the desert where a guide gave me that advice. He said, you know, every day is your first day of work. That's how he came with such this energy that it impressed me so much. It was one of the greatest days I ever had. And I asked him and he said, it's my first day. And I was freaked out because his job was to drive me off of cliffs. So I wasn't real enthused about the whole first day thing. But he said, you know, it's been my first day for 17 years, man. I come every day like it's my first. I'm a recovering alcoholic. One of the tenets of the program is like, if you don't want to have a drink for the rest of your life, you choose not to have a drink today. And then you treat every day like it's your first day to recommit to that decision because that's non-negotiable, right? And so all of that came together. Like I thought of leadership as a small club. I started to have that shifted when I watched someone's life and very young, but matters so much. Then I had all the work that I was doing all of a sudden paled in comparison to the impact I'd had on this person by accident. I started to meet these incredible leaders who, and one of whom gave me that idea. And then just as I attempted to make my life better one day at a time, whether it was leaving alcohol behind or losing 100 pounds, I kept getting this advice saying, do not worry about the future. Worry about the decisions you make today. And I realized leadership was the same way. Any voyage you're on, right? To health, to mental health, to career success, to leadership. Figure out the non-negotiable behaviors that have to happen on the first day and then just commit to them over and over again. It's how I don't drink. It's how I'm not 300 pounds anymore. It's like, all right, on your first day of weight loss, you do this. And then I get up tomorrow and say, on your first day of weight loss, you do this. But man, after 200 days of that, you're like 70 pounds lighter.
Wow.
So that's day one. And I'm sorry, it's a long answer. It's just there's...
No, that's a great answer.
Looking for the one thing that causes something, and it does it. There's no reason for anything. There are reasons for everything, right?
Well, I think that's encouraging to a lot of people, at least it is to me, because often we watch people with their catalyst event. Something changed, right? To your point, someone died. They got cancer. Life changed. I've never had any of that happen, Drew. Nothing. Like, I'm really fortunate, man. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying, and I know a lot of people are like that, right? We don't all have a catalyst event, but we have catalyst events. We have a life that shaped us. And I think that's encouraging. At least I hope that's encouraging for others, because that's encouraging for me, because I got to tell you, man, when people ask me for my seminal story, where did things start? I really don't know, except for birth. And I mean that sincerely. I really don't know. And I try to live every day, you know, the best day. So it's encouraging, not discouraging, to hear that there's a longer answer there than just one event. And I think that's really cool, man.
You know, and for people who are listening to, and they can think of those like really big events in their lives. And one of the things that I just find really interesting, before I forget, because I don't usually mention it when I do interviews, is that one of the truly great overblown crap is New Year's Eve. Like, New Year's Eve sucks. Like, it's always a letdown. It's way too much pressure put on it. And so I always started to look at it like this. Pick like the worst day of your life, which nobody likes to think about. But think about the worst day of your life, because right now that date has this horrible connotation in your head. The worst day of my life, I treat that every year as New Year's Day. Because January 1st is completely arbitrary. And it doesn't mean much to most of us. We just make it up. But for me, January 17th every year, that means I've gone one more year away from this terrible thing that happened. I've gotten through another year with all of the pain and the doubt and the scars that created. And that's worth celebrating. You know what I mean? As opposed to, oh, it's December 31st, Happy New Year. I try to tell everybody, instead of just sitting there and dreading that day, I start to treat that day as New Year's Day. So all the people who are out there thinking about this, you know, these awful seminal moments that may have changed the course of their life, and some of them are good, but many of them are negative. Start treating that day as your New Year's Day. Celebrate that what you've accomplished to get through another year after that difficulty. Because in the days right after, if you told me that there would be a year from that day, you just can't fathom it at that moment. So like these seminal moments that shape us, when they are really bad, let's don't try to pretend they didn't exist. Treat that as your New Year's Day. And the next day it comes around, celebrate the fact that you just made it another year strong and resilient and patient and getting through it. And that to me is just something like it's not in the book. It's just something that had meant a lot to me. And for everybody out there who's thinking about those tough moments in their lives, like lean into them. January 17th is New Year's Day for me because it represents another year where I made it. And that's worth doing. And that's personal leadership, and we should celebrate it.
That's awesome. Well, happy 6 months and 17 days after that day for you, man. So I'm glad for that day, no matter how tough it was, because obviously it made you who you are and helped you be here today. So thank you, buddy.
No problem, man. Thank you.
Yeah. So around that, you talk in the book, you say leadership isn't in the big things. Mm-hmm. Leadership is in the consistent things. What does that mean, Drew?
I think what happens is when we evaluate our lives as people and as leaders, but you know, I think really as human beings, we put a lot of focus on extraordinary days, like days where things happen that don't usually happen, right? And you got good extraordinary days where you get promoted or you have something amazing happen or you accomplish something you've been working at. Good extraordinary. There also is bad extraordinary. You fail at something you really wanted, or as a team, you get denied something that you believe you deserve, or you get hurt or are hurt, or you get hurt by or hurt someone that you really care about. Those are negative extraordinary days. And we learn a lot about ourselves and each other in these big extraordinary days. But one thing I think we sometimes lose track of is that the extraordinary days in our lives are always outnumbered by the everydays. And the nature and the frequency of those extraordinary days is determined by how we behave in the ordinary days. And the true nature of ourselves and our character and our teams is determined in the ordinary days. Long-term success and failure, ordinary days. Yet when we say, am I a leader or am I a good person? It's always, how many extraordinary days have I had and how did I perform in them? And they're these really tiny subsection of our lives. And part of it is school, because in school, think about it. Let's say you went to school for 12 weeks in a semester, in high school, like college, university, and your final grade, two midterms and a final. Like 3 days determined, it didn't matter what you did when you went to class. It didn't matter how much you participated. It was, how did you behave on two midterms and a final? All that matters in terms of your work is these big, extraordinary days. And we take that lesson all through life. And my idea is this: instead of only seeing ourselves as leaders when these big things happen, when you get promoted, when you graduate from somewhere, you get a new degree, you make more money, instead of evaluating our leadership in that. So that means that every day in your leadership is always evaluated over blocks of time. How did I do this month? How did I do this year? How did I do this 5 years? And you evaluate it by how much you achieved and acquired over that block of time, how much other people are impressed by you over that block of time. My argument is that we're not always in control of the big days. So let's evaluate our leadership by the stuff we're in control of. And that's how we behave on each day. The big things are generated by consistent behavior. So if you want, let's look at it this way. I am 100 pounds lighter than I was 4 years ago. I was 100 pounds lighter a year to the day I decided I wanted to lose weight, all right? So the big thing is the day I got on the scale and was 100 pounds lighter, right? But that emerged because every single day between day one and that day, and every single one of them was supposed to be day one, but as I say in the book, I built in 65 day twos, days where you didn't live up to what you were supposed to. But that big event happened because each day I said, here are the behaviors, here are the consistent things I have to do today, only worrying about today, not what I did yesterday, not what I'll do tomorrow. I have to eat 1,800 calories or less today. I have to burn in total between exercise and just being alive 3,000 calories, right? That's a 1,200 calorie deficit. And I talked to an expert on how to do this. And I have to do 50 more seconds of cardio today than I did yesterday. Which doesn't seem like much, but when you start being able to do 2.5 minutes of cardio, like that's pretty good. So by the end of 100 days, right? Like you can run for an hour or so, which isn't crazy, but it is when you're only running for 2 minutes, right? So leadership wasn't in the fact I stepped on a scale and had lost 100 pounds. Leadership was in the consistent behaviors that I did every day to have done that. The same thing when you talk about saving money, making a down payment on a house, right? Oh, that's a big extraordinary moment in your life. And a whole lot of people watching right now would be like, that will never happen for me. All right. But it's the, I put $5 away today. I put a quarter away today. It's in the leadership is in the consistent things. Anybody can stumble into a big moment in their life, but only true leaders can create and build big moments in their life. And that's what I meant by leadership is in the consistent things. If you want to be, let's say you want to be someone who's kind, right? And here's like a something I've noticed. Anybody who said, like the phrase, I'm the type of person who is almost always followed by a falsehood. Like think about every time you've heard the phrase, oh, I'm the type of person who, and then it's almost always followed by a falsehood because people who are kind or compassionate or honest don't say it, they just do it. And so if you want to be someone who, let's say, is kind, my question would be, okay, what have you done today to embody kindness? And most people can't give a specific example. We just go through our lives like holding on to these, oh, well, I bought coffee for the person behind me in Tim Hortons for hopefully some Canadian listeners. But if you only did that once this month, like that is a kind act, but you are not consistently kind. And maybe whenever you get the opportunity, you're kind, but are you planning to do it every day? Or is it just lucky if you stumble into an opportunity? There's a difference between hoping to do something and planning to do it. Leaders plan and execute consistently. That's where your leadership is. You don't get to say you're something if you can't give evidence that you've done it more than once in the past 72 hours. Does that make sense?
Yep. So leading on purpose, with purpose, intentionally, is what you're talking about here. You're not talking leadership as far as taking, you know, being General Patton that's leading all the troops, which makes so much more sense and is so much more attainable for so many people, or, you know, the kindness or whatever, to do that purposefully. So instead of accidentally, oh, look, there's somebody behind me in line, I should buy them coffee. Instead, you go find a line and buy somebody coffee in the line that's already there. Is that the difference, Drew?
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is that you get up in the morning knowing that these are the things that you plan on accomplishing every day that are consistent with who you want to be. And that, to me, is the type of leadership I talk about, to be very clear. Is not, when I say everyone is a leader, I do not mean everyone can be a CEO, everybody can be a senior manager, everybody can have a six-figure salary, all right? What I am saying is there is a form of leadership to which we all can and should aspire. And that is a daily commitment to identifying the values we want to stand for and then actually giving ourselves evidence that we stand for them, ourselves evidence. In the process of doing that, you're almost definitely going to have a positive impact on other people. But the type of leadership I talk about, this personal culture of leadership, says you don't go through any day of your life without a clear plan on how to give yourself evidence that you're the person you want to be. And for me, you know, to not dive too deeply into the process of the book, I'll kind of skip over the how and just get to what came the way I do it. I basically approach every day one. And the book teaches you how to do this for you. So I'm using my personal examples of the values that I've come up with as a result of this process. I get every day and I treat every day as if it's day one. And in order to earn another day one on the planet, you have to pass a test at the end of each day. Like imagine that, like you had to prove and earn as you go to bed every night, I deserve to get up tomorrow. And that, like I kind of approach it like that. And to do that, to prove it, you have to pass a test at the end of the day. I have to pass what I call the leadership test at the end of the day. That test consists of 6 questions. And in order to earn another day on the planet, I have to have answered 3 of them. The cool thing is, I have got the answers to the test at the beginning of the day. So that's a pretty high stakes test, right? But you get the questions ahead of time. And so I get to plan and go through my day looking for opportunities to answer them. Now, how did the test get created? What I did is I realized I did not know the values that I stood for. And we use a lot of words. A student came up and asked me what leadership meant to me, and I choked on it. I mean, I teach leadership, right? And I was like, crap. Yet I use these words. We use these words all the time. Well, let me ask you this to talk, just to give a little bit of background to the people watching about why I talk about leadership values. If I had someone, I don't know if you've read this like through the whole book, but if I had someone follow you around for 30 days, and at the end of it, I said, what are the values this guy stands for just based on his behavior without him knowing you're following him? What values do you hope that person says, the top three that you stand for every day you go out into the world?
For me? So yeah. love, connection,
yep.
and kindness.
Love, connection, and kindness. All awesome, right? All sound good. I ask a lot of people that question, the 30-day scenario, and most people cannot rhyme off three things they want to stand for. They know they want to be a good person, but they haven't actually gone any farther than that. And so love, that's a really tough one you gave me, because words that we use and we do not define mean nothing, all right? They cannot drive behavior if they don't actually have a definition. So finish this sentence. Love is a commitment to what?
Let's see. Good question. So love is a commitment to valuing other people for who they are.
Okay. Valuing other people for who they are. And what was that? Kindness?
Yeah. Love, connection, and kindness. Yep.
Okay. Connection is a commitment to what?
So to being present in other people's lives and to connecting them with the ideas and resources they need to better their life.
Awesome. Have you generally defined those things out loud before now?
No.
Yeah. And look, I'm not laughing at you. I'm just saying these are two of the three I just asked you are the core things you want to stand for in your life. And yet you've never had to define what they mean out loud. And if you don't define things, if you don't turn them into a finish line so you know when you crossed it, if you don't say these are the behaviors that define love and connection and kindness, you can't plan to live up to that definition. You just stumble into it. And so the idea that day one talks about is, one, here's how to figure out what those values are. Because here's the thing. What you just rhymed off may seem to be what your values are, but I've discovered that if you just ask people, it doesn't have the same impact as if you surface the values, you run them through exercises, right? And as you said, the book is some work at the end, right? I put all that stuff at the end. I lay out the process and then say, here's how you do it if you want to. But you surface your values and then you define what they mean and then you turn them into the leadership test. And by that, I mean, you replace the definition with, oh, it's valuing, you know, valuing people for who they are, and you turn it into a question. So what did I do today to show someone I value them for who they are? Or how did I make somebody feel as if they had someone who had their back today? Mike, I don't know if he's still listening. Mike wrote a blog when it comes to love on Valentine's Day, I think it was, that was entitled I Love You Is Bullshit. And if you get a chance, if Mike wants to put it on the screen or something with the link to it. And it was one of the most profound things I'd ever read, especially on Valentine's Day, right? You know, clickbait, I love you is bullshit. But what he said was, is that we just say, I love you, much like we say love or kindness or accountability are our core values. We just say it. And then when you say the words, it's like liking something on Facebook. Like, for example, with the book, I have many people who like the link to pre-buying my book, but they don't pre-buy the book. Or you have lots, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying Facebook has done this, right? It's sort of like, oh, I liked that. I liked that charity, but you didn't donate, cannot feed that village with your thumbs up. So the same thing with I love you. And I love what Mike said about this is that instead of saying I love you, imagine you weren't allowed to. Imagine in your relationship with someone that you love a lot, you banned the phrase I love you, which seems like a dark thing to do. But then all you can do is behave in ways that show I love you. And the idea was that, for instance, saying you're someone who's honest or kind or loving without actually defining the behaviors consistent with it and then doing them, well, it's just an easy out, right? It's a way of saying your leadership without living your leadership. So you take your value and you switch it to a question. So let me give this specific example. When I went through the process in the book, all right, and this evolved over time, but once I developed the process in the book and I ran myself through it, I discovered that the six values that drive me are impact, growth, courage, empowerment, class, and self-respect. I wanted, if I'm the leader I want to be, and if I want to know that no matter what happens in a given day, that I was the man I wanted to be at least, I had to be able to prove to myself at the end of the day that I embodied three out of these six values: impact, courage, growth, empowerment, class, and self-respect. And instead of just saying, these are what I want to stand for, I created the leadership test, a question associated with each one of those values. And you cannot answer that question without living the value. And so instead of me going out in the world and saying, I want to demonstrate love today, or I want to demonstrate impact today, I had a very specific question. What have I done today to recognize someone else's leadership? That was my impact question, because I defined impact as a commitment to creating moments that cause people to feel better off for having interacted with me. That's what impact means. I'm an impactful person. It means I create moments out there in the world where people walk away from me, whether they're a good friend or someone on an interview or listening to an interview or serving me in a restaurant. They walk away feeling better off for that interaction or reading an email from me, right? So how I do that is every single day I know by the end of the day I have to answer, how have I recognized someone else's leadership today? Because you cannot tell another person they are a leader in your life without them feeling better for it. Like, I don't know anybody who've been like, the way you do your job, the way you've treated me, the way you impact other people, the way you teach your kids really inspires me and makes me want to be a better person. Like, nobody walks away from that going, what a dick, right? So that's my question there. And I did it for the other ones, you know. Courage, what did I try today that might not work, but tried anyway? Growth, what did I do today to make it more likely someone would learn something? Make it more likely, because sometimes it won't happen, right? But your leadership is in the consistent effort. What did I do today to help someone else move closer to a goal? Empowerment. In a world that teaches us we're competing with one another for scarce resources and accolades, to make sure that part of your day is dedicated to moving other people forward, that's important to me. Class. How did I elevate a situation instead of escalate one today? Because leaders elevate, meaning they try to succeed. They don't escalate, meaning they try to win, right? Because people will communicate and collaborate in search of success. But man, they will dig in and defend their territory when they're battling to win, right? And self-respect, what did I do today to be good to myself? Every day, if I get three out of those six questions, I was a leader. And I gave myself proof that I'm the man I want to be. And that's really important, because we are not always in charge of what we have to do every day, but we are always in charge of who we are. We never, ever give up that right. And sometimes we very rarely flex that muscle, that reminder that some days everything in this world will blow up in our face. But on those days, I can still get two or three or four of my questions. And what happens is then you go home and you can acknowledge that you got beat, right? Like, today was a loss, but it wasn't a waste. And I think when we don't have this clear plan to give ourselves evidence that we've been good people, that we have impacted others and led our lives, but well, on days where horrible things happen, or when not even horrible things, just nothing good happens, I think that we see those days as waste, just another one in the hopper. When you get these questions and you give yourself the gift of saying, here's what I want to stand for, and I'm going to make it part of my plan every day, on the days where things don't go well, where it's not a win, you can say it was a loss. A loss is better than a waste. When you lose, you played, all right? You were active. You were an agent of your own life. And it's a waste, that's not the case. Giving yourself the gift of being able to recognize a loss versus a waste, but still knowing that on those days you were the person you wanted to be, that's leadership. And that's what I wanted to try to teach people. And I started with, in the book, here's the six that work for me, because if you want a starter kit on day one, like, you don't want to quite yet do the exercises that help you figure out your own values and create your own questions, here's the starter kit, right? Those six questions, start there, because you're going to go out and have impact. You're going to grow yourself. You're going to help other people grow. You're going to act with class, and you're going to take care of yourself. That's where you start on day one. String enough of those together, and all the stuff that we treat as goals, money and a good career and healthy relationships and self-worth and self-respect, all these things we treat as goals, they're not goals. Like, they're the natural byproducts that come from people who say, this is what I stand for, and give themselves evidence of it. That does not mean that you always win. It does not mean you are always successful. But at the end of the day, when you can point to specific acts that you undertook to be the man or the woman that you want, like, that changes you. Like, it really does. Like, when you don't know what to do, like, ask yourself, like, Phil, when you don't know what to do the next time, just ask yourself, what would a great man do? And then do that. And if you go back and look at a series of 25 decisions in a row where you said, what would a great man do? And you did that. Like, how do you not feel like a great man? Like, we'll try to talk ourselves out of it. But the challenge, I think, is this. Sometimes what a great man would do or what a great woman would do sucks. Like, full out sucks. It's hard and it's awkward and it's painful for you and other people, and it costs you money and jobs and relationships. But man, like, if you make every decision like you're going to make it, like you're standing in front of a room 5 years from now explaining why you made it to a room full of people you respect instead of you're about to make it, like, it changes how you make decisions. Like, looking back, every time you compromised who you were for a decision, for in a moment to avoid consequences, 5 years from now, you freaking wish that you'd accepted the consequences so that you could tell that story like you wanted to. And then I quit because that was inconsistent with my values. That's the value of coming up with your own values, trying to live them every day, is that they sit there as criteria for decision making. You know, when you got to make a call, you turn to your values and you go, which one of these options is most consistent with my values? And then you make the one that sucks and you hate it. But 5 years from now, you're, and most of the criteria we use now to make decisions is what will avoid the most consequences right now. That's usually the criteria we use to make decisions. What will avoid the most consequences right now? That is not how leaders make decisions. And I do it sometimes too, right? You're just like, I know what is right. That's the key, right? It's tattooed on the inside of my left arm, right? What would the man I want to be do? What would the woman you want to be do? And that is always what you pivot back to when you have a tough decision to make. The challenge is that we were never taught to think about what man and what woman we wanted to be. Growing up, we were taught, what do you want to do? Not who do you want to be? And we pay attention to the stuff we're going to get tested on. We never got tested on that. What are your criteria for decisions? Who do you want to be? It was always, what do you want to do? And we became our own worst subjects. We don't know what our core values are. We can't use them to make big decisions. And so we always revert back to what will avoid the most consequences now. And we often regret those decisions. So that's why day one leadership is saying, here's what we stand for. Here's a plan to live for it. And the bonus is you get a set of criteria that you can use to make the toughest decisions in your life.
Wow.
I just talked for a long time. Sorry, folks. I really like this stuff.
No, dude, it's great, man, because that's so powerful. So we had a couple people pop in. We had Catherine Brown and Megan Mary Dawn said hello. Krisha Hayovic says, love that idea. At some point, I was just enraptured but with what you're saying, which the big thing that you said, and that's cool that you have it tattooed, is what would a man, in your case, right, for others, what the woman I'd want to be do in this situation? What person I want to be? And I think that's such a powerful question. Your book, Drew, offers some insights into how to uncover that and then how to live that way, which is interesting because so many times, you know, you talked about we want to win. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a book, a leadership book about how to be and how to be different. And I think that really makes it powerful. So I'm going to give you the last word here, brother. What's one other concept or idea or something about day one that people can take today, that they can take back that we haven't talked about, that might help them just a little bit more be the person that they want to be today?
Okay. I'm going to in leadership, you never steal an idea. You benchmark a best practice.
There you go.
So I'm going to benchmark an idea that was given to me by my friend Stephanie, because this really resonates with me. And I think that whenever you look at all the leadership research, the ability to be self-aware and self-reflective is so key to high-performing leaders. And she gave me a really interesting and kind of practical way, because people think, oh, self-awareness, self-reflective, it sometimes seems beyond us. Who's got time? I don't meditate. You know, like, it seems like something that is beyond some of us. She put it in a really practical way, and I'll leave it with this. So I was out having coffee with her once, and she is Canada's most decorated Paralympian. She has like 9 world records, and she's competed at the Beijing, Athens, and Sydney Paralympics, right? So she is an incredibly accomplished human being. She's won, she's in the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame and has won the Order of Canada, which is basically Canada's version of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And so she is an intimidating human being. When you're in the room across from somebody who is that accomplished, you start to let these self-personal doubts sort of get into you. So I started talking about my insecurities, specifically when it came to profession, like my profession. I, you know, the hustle culture of entrepreneurship, you should be working 90 hours a week. You've got 18 hours in the day, and what are you using them? And look, Grant Cardone, Gary Vaynerchuk, good at what they do, and that resonates with some people, but it can be profoundly damaging mentally and physically. But I was like, am I hustling hard enough? Like, I've got these great opportunities in this cool job, but I made it a personal mission to not work more than 40 hours a week. If I work more than 40 hours a week, I've failed myself. And yet that flies in the face of hustle culture, right? So I'm like, am I working hard enough? I hadn't written my book at the time, right? And I've been meaning to for years. Oh, I should have a book out. I should have an online program. I should do all this scalable product stuff that other speakers do, right? And I was like, yeah, maybe I'm just not taking advantage of these opportunities. And Steph looks at me and goes, do you like your career? And I said, yeah, I love my career, man. It's amazing. And she said, do you like your life? And I said, yeah, at the time, I'm like, my life is better than I ever could have imagined it right now. And she says, then you need to stop wearing your fake leg. I said, what? And she said, look, I was born without a right hip, and most prosthetics are built for people who have some piece of the limb left, right? And they're really helpful for a lot of people. And I don't have a problem with big legs per se, but she said, for me, they slowed me down and they hurt me. I'm way faster on a set of crutches in one leg, but for almost all of my young life, when we're talking high school and into university, I always wore that fake leg because it made other people more comfortable with me. Being around the one-legged girl made people uncomfortable. So I wore this fake leg, which slowed me down and hurt me so that other people were more okay with who I was. And she said, anything that you keep in your life that slows you down and hurts you, and the only reason it's still in your life is to make other people okay with your life and okay with you, that is your fake leg. And she says, most of the people I know in the world are wearing a fake leg, and most of them are able-bodied. And she said, Drew, your fake leg is all of these doubts and all of these worries about whether other people are okay with a life and a career that you love. That's your fake leg. Stop wearing your fake leg. And I think that if I was going to leave anybody with anything, sit back for just a minute and ask yourself, what is my fake leg? What are the things that I'm keeping in my life that are slowing me down and hurting me? And the only reason I keep them in my life is to make other people okay with me. Am I still in this relationship or this marriage? Because at 33, you're supposed to be in a relationship in this marriage. It's slowing you down and it's hurting you, but you're still in it because of that. That's your fake leg. I hate this job. It sucks my soul every single day. It doesn't make me feel alive, but man, it pays well. And I got a mortgage and I just had a kid. All right. That job is your fake leg. You're keeping it in your life. It's slowing you down and it's hurting you, but you're doing it because you don't want to be unemployed. All right. Whatever that thing you're keeping in your life that is slowing you down and hurting you, it's your fake leg, get rid of it. And when Steph told me that, it took an entire lifetime of self-reflection and made it simple. Just sit back and going, what's my fake leg? And once you realize that it's there, you have to realize that every day you strap it on, you are basically saying that my normal is not worth it. You are basically saying, I don't deserve better. You are settling. You are settling. And I don't care how old you are too young to settle. You're way too young to settle. And if you're 85 and watching this, and senior citizens are the number one growing Facebook group, you're too young to settle. And so I know that's another story. I love telling stories, but that I would pass on. And one thing I love about Steph is that I asked her once what advice I should give to a class of grade eights, and almost all of them were young women. So we're talking 13-year-old girls, right? Not my demo. And she said, tell them they have to be the love of their own life. They'll be taught most of their life to try to change themselves so they can attract somebody else. Tell them you have to be the love of your own life, because joy is the sexiest thing on the planet. And she has the word enough tattooed around her wedding band finger, just to be like, I married myself. You should love the person you're going to spend most of your time with, and that's you. So she goes, I married myself, and I'm enough. And if no ring ever goes on that finger over that, that's okay, because that's all I need on that finger. And I always loved that. Taking off your fake leg is an act of love. And recognizing that you are enough is an act of love. Making yourself your favorite date is an act of love. And it's hard sometimes, because sometimes when you are when you're married to yourself, you freaking hate your spouse. But man, I don't know, man, when you treat yourself with respect, you just instinctively treat everyone else with it too, right? That's why there's a whole chapter on self-respect. The longest chapter in the book is on self-respect.
Wow. Wow. Well, last comment here from one of our viewers and listeners, Jennifer McCallman says, Drew is so inspirational. I didn't mean to watch this whole thing now, but it's so compelling and thought provoking. And Drew, I got to tell you, buddy, I feel the same way. This has really been a treat. I really appreciate you sharing as much as you did, man. This is really
good. Oh, well, thank you. And thanks for having me on. Like, this is really cool. I like the live interactive piece, and, I'll tell everybody what happened is I posted a photo of me with my book, the first ever copy. And Phil was like all over me, like, let's do a Facebook Live. And then this is our first time meeting face to face. I had to leave the football league, I'm afraid. I swore
you're going to lose anyway, dude. Just send me $100. It's fine.
Look, I swore off the NFL back when they were doing this nonsense. And then it came down to that moment, right, where now I actually have to pull out of my fantasy football leagues and say, I got so ticked off at what was going on and, you know, whether it's domestic abuse to this crap with the anthem and such, but I was like, I'm done with the NFL. And that was of course easy when there's no NFL, when you're not staring at the fall and this thing that you loved. And it was kind of, I had to decide, and it was sort of like, what would the man I want to be do? And it would be like, you'd live up to that stupid tweet you sent, you idiot. And so, yeah, I'll miss you. I'll miss laying the smackdown, which is odd to say considering my team is called the Snuggle Nuggets.
That's true. That is true.
There will be no
more talk smack to you just for fun, though.
Just come on to Facebook and be like, just wanted to say, you suck.
You're gone. Yeah, no. But I think it does align with who you are. I think that's, you know, when you first told me that you weren't participating, I have to tell you, I was disappointed. Now having this interview, Drew, I respect you even more, man. And I mean that. I think it's really crazy because I don't know that, you know, I don't know a lot of people would do that. So I think that's amazing, man. And I think your book is incredible, dude. Really.
Oh, really? Thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is This Is Day One, folks. For those of you who don't have a copy yet, and you probably don't because it's not out yet, I got the PDF. Like I said, it's fantastic. Drew Dudley is amazing. If you're looking for more of Drew, you go to drewdudley.com. He's Day One, O-N-E, Drew, on Twitter. He's a really nice guy that actually is, at least most of the time, I bet, the man that he wants to be. And he certainly was today with us. I'm thankful for you, my friend. Thank you for sharing up yourself and being a great guy. Thanks, man.
And thanks to everybody who watched. That means a lot. Have fun. Thank you, my man.
Absolutely. My pleasure, man. All right. So go to drewdudley.com. Pick up your own copy of This Is Day One. Get it on Amazon, wherever good books are sold, or somewhere.